is Dan Austin. The date is June 12th, 1991. I'm with George Bamberger, former manager of the Milwaukee Brewers, New York Mets, and pitching coach for the Baltimore Orioles in the late 60s through the late 70s. His home is in North Reddington Beach, Florida, which is part of the Tampa Bay area. And by the way, this is also the anniversary date of the opening of the Baseball Hall of Fame. It was June 12, 1939, that the Baseball Hall of Fame was opened in Cooperstown, New York, which I think was set up as the 100th birthday, that is in 1939, that supposedly Abner Doubleday invented baseball in 1839 on June 12th.
Now I think that's questioned according to what I read in the paper recently.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, they said something in the paper recently that somebody else, baseball had started before then.
Yes, rounders, and probably goes back to the Dutch
so.
And
I
the English
know
and the like.
I didn't quite.
This recording is to the property of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And we're pleased that George Bamberger agreed to be interviewed. And, of course, with his background, there's going to be a lot of talking about baseball. Thank you, George. And if you'd give briefly your name, your date of birth, where you were born, and a brief comment of how you got involved to be in the lovely game of baseball as a kid. Would you, George?
I certainly. Well, my name is George Bamberg. I was born in Staten Island, New York, August 1st, 1925.
That was farmland then.
Pardon?
That was farmland then.
Yeah, that's right. It was a great place then. It was a really great place. But anyway, I was born on Staten Island, and I did not play high school baseball because I went to a school that was way on the other end of the island, and they didn't have a field, and you had to go a couple miles the other way. However, I did play a lot of basketball, but baseball was my number one game. I went in the service. I was an infielder. I used to play third and short. Wasn't much of a hitter, but had a great arm, or a good arm, let me put it that way. I went in the service, and I was overseas.
World War II?
Yeah, World War II. I was in North Africa, and we had a baseball team there, and I was playing shortstop and third base. But during the workouts, you know how you're always fooling around throwing to a catcher or something. I used to do that all the time. And then one day we had a game that our pitcher wasn't doing too well. We had another game tomorrow. So the manager says to me, George, would you like to pitch? And I said, yeah, I like to pitch, sure. We always thought we were better than we were, I guess. But anyway, I was very wild, threw very hard. And of course, that was probably my greatest asset, that I was wild. And I did very well. Mm-hmm. So then they started me a ball game. And of course, before long, to keep this short, I became the number one pitcher on the club. And so now I came back from the service, and a fellow named Mel Logan was a scout.
Mm-hmm. With what club?
With the New York Giants.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there was King Lear with Chicago White Sox, wanted to sign my brother and myself together.
Mm-hmm.
My brother didn't want to go away and play pro ball, which he was an excellent ball player. So therefore, I picked the Giants because a couple friends of mine were going away also on the same team I played with on Staten Island. So anyway, I went away as an infielder. They said, take a look at this guy on the mound. I never fielded one ball. In other words, the first day, right after the war, we had 50-some pitchers on each club down in Lakewood, New Jersey.
How many?
50-some pitchers. The guys that, see, before the war, that went away, the guys that played during the war, and then myself after the war was signed. So now all these plays are put together. So now everything went alphabetical order. So I threw batting practice. I'll never forget this. In 1946, Lakewood, New Jersey, I walked off the mound, and there was a manager named Earl Wolgamatt, who was the manager of the Trenton Ball Club. He says to me, kid, I really like your arm. Now, just throwing batting practice. Now, Dan, that night, in the mansion, the Rockefeller Mansion, where we stay, Lakeview, New Jersey, they cut players because they didn't like what they saw in batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's most the first day. Now, how can you tell? I was the first pitcher, I don't know why, maybe because Bamberger, there was no A's on the club, to throw in an inner squad game, which was the next day. Now, there was no getting in shape. The first five hitters I struck out, and then in the sixth hit, hit a ground ball to first base. So I had to feel pretty good about that. And you know what? And I have no reason to really feel this way, but there was no doubt in my mind that I had the club made. You understand what I'm trying to say? That was the Trenton Ball Club. But couple of weeks later, they sent me down to Erie.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, what I'm trying to say is, and I don't know why, there was no doubt in my mind that I was going to play professional ball. I don't know why I thought I was better than anybody else, mm-hmm. but I just did.
All of a sudden it clicked.
I just did. So anyway, I went to Erie, Pennsylvania, the first year. And
what league was that in?
That was Class C.
Class C, what league?
Middle Atlantic League.
Middle Atlantic.
Yeah. And I won 13 and I lost 3. And I led the league in earned run average of 1.35, which probably still is a record there. So that's how I got started.
That made Bob Gibson arch his eyebrows.
Is that
1.35 ERA.
Yeah, yeah, so I did, you know, I did pretty well from an infielder turning pitcher, and things went uphill. I had a lot of setbacks, don't get me wrong. When I think I had things made, I was with Jersey City. The Giants were not too good of a ball club, and I guess it was 51 or something to hit all the home runs. 200 and some home runs.
Yeah, that's when I think it was 221 home runs.
That was 49.
Was that 49?
1949.
At that time, that was a major league record.
1949, and I'm pitching with Jersey City, and I'm having a great year, considering one of the best prospects, and I hurt my arm. I lost all the circulation from my shoulder down. It was a question.
Am I didn't warm up properly?
No. What it was, don't ask me why, I probably caught cold or something. That two guys are playing catch. I picked the ball up, and I only threw it about 20 feet. Had the worst pain I've ever had and lost the circulation. I couldn't shave. I couldn't do nothing. And what it was, finally, a chiropractor diagnosed it as two bones were jammed together and was cutting off the circulation to the arm. Now, he said you had to do that slide, and I used to. When I was a pitcher, I played. When I was on the bases, I played exactly like when I was an infielder.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I remember coming sliding home. I can't say that was what done it. But I remember sliding home head first, right into the catcher's shin guards, you know.
Head first into home plate?
Just to get safe. I mean, that's the way I just saw it was automatic.
I guess you slid in high in second base as well, didn't you?
Now, did I do it doing something like that? I don't know. But that was evidently a problem. Uh-huh. But he solved the problem. And
so you got back and you corrected that. What, did it take about a year or just a few months? And then you went on pitching?
No, it took about 2 months. He said to me, it's going to take 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Winter is setting now, you understand what I'm trying to say? And finally, it did clear up. I played basketball. He said, go play basketball. I run down the court. I couldn't even lift my right arm. I became a left-hand shooter, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because I couldn't do it.
Just favored
then
that right arm.
Then all of a sudden, just like that, I said, oh, my arm's all right. And it never has bothered me since.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I was very lucky. Yeah. But my career, I was very lucky because my success came late.
It took a few years.
Yeah, in other words, I played 18 years, and I coached. Then I became a coach, and I coached 10 years for the Orioles.
Well, the record I have is that, and I'm going to quote from the Encyclopedia of Baseball, that the Genio Bamberger recorded 213 victories in 18 years as a minor league pitcher.
That's right.
But one more recognition as a major league pitching coach and manager.
Uh-huh. That's right.
You would agree with that?
Oh, yeah. That's why I say my success came later. See, after I finished playing, I worked for the Orioles. They called me up about 3 years, Dan, before I was ready to retire. The Orioles called me up and said, George, we've never had a minor league pitcher instructor, and we're wondering if you're ready to retire. If you are, we'd like to name you as the minor league pitcher instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And I thanked him very much, and I said, no, I'm going to play another year.
But that's a long time playing the minor leagues, George.
Right, that's right, 18
years. That's a lot of traveling.
That's right. But I was lucky, Dan. I never traveled club to club.
What do you mean?
In other words, when I went, like, you know, a lot of ball players would go to a big league club, then they go here, and they go here, or, and you know, they were transferred here and there.
Yeah.
I never was. I probably, in my 18 years, never made more than 3 moves during the season. One was with the Giants, you know, down
Jersey
City.
So
Giants to Oakland. I ever saw to Oakland, you know what I mean? Well, Jersey City, I didn't figure that because I was living right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was very lucky that way. I never, once I got to a place I was going, that's where I stayed.
Why didn't they ever call you up to the major leagues?
Well,
that's a long time to spend in the minors.
First of all, remember one thing. They had Larry Jansen, they had Magley, they had Coslow, Hearn, and so on.
It's kind of hard to break in then.
Right, and there was only 16 major league clubs there.
Oh, that's okay.
I was making the all-star teams out there. Like you say, I won 200 and some games and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I went to spring training 1 year. It was 1951, right here in St. Petersburg, Florida. We traded with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
They went to They traded with us. They went to Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. We came down here. And I'll never forget, before we know, then you used to break camp,
mm-hmm.
and you play 15 days on the road back mm-hmm. to your home base.
Yeah, you had longer home and stands as well as away from home.
Yeah, but when you broke spring training, we used to play the Cleveland Indians 15 days, every day. Maybe Dallas, Texas, Houston, and so on.
Oh, okay.
And then you end up at West Point, and then you end up in New York. I pitched down against the Cardinals. First, I started the game, three men up, three men down, walked off the field. Eddie Stanky says to me, "Man, you won yourself a job, George." There was no doubt in my mind that I had the ball club made. Not only me, but there was Roger Bowman, a left-hand pitcher,
mm-hmm.
that had equal success as I did. You understand
mm-hmm.
me?
Mm-hmm.
Now we play 15 days on the road. I never pitch one inning. And I haven't been scored on in all spring. Never pitch one inning.
Why?
Well, that's the question. I don't know. Now the season starts. 23 days after the season starts, or 21, it's either one of those 2 days,
mm-hmm.
we're playing the Dodgers in Ebbets Field. We're losing 7-1. The eighth inning, the bottom of the eighth, we're playing Ebbets mm-hmm. Field. They put me in. Duke Snyder's the first hitter. I got him out.
Okay.
Jackie Robinson, next hitter, hit a home run.
Mm-hmm.
They took me out of the ball game. That's the only thing I faced. Took me out of the ball game. Next day, shipped me out. What they did is they waited until you hung yourself. They had their staff made. Now, you could break camp with a couple extra players at that mm-hmm. time. And I guess I did so well, and I just won 17 games and missed 6 weeks of the season with Oakland the year
mm-hmm.
before I made
yeah.
the All-Star game. In fact, they thought I was possibly going to win 30 games. But anyway, they said, "You hung yourself," is what it amounts to. And they said,
on one
yeah,
pitch?
On one pitch. That's what it was. Yeah, that's
and they were just looking for
that's
that
the way
one.
Baseball used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be. In other words, the staff was picked.
Yeah.
And there was no room, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they could hold you. They hold you for 6 years
yeah.
or so.
Yeah.
I kept winning every place I went. Roger Bowman and I, I'm not saying it was just me, Roger Bowman and I, he was a left-hand pitcher, was right in exactly the same shoes. We both were the stars where we were playing,
mm-hmm.
or one mm-hmm. of the top players,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean,
yeah.
pitchers. And we both went through the same thing, and we both never really made it.
Well,
but that's
I mean,
like, but Dan, that might have been the greatest thing ever happened to me. And I tell people...
As when you look back from years come
oh,
by.
Oh, sure. When I look back now, if I would have been successful in New York as a pitcher for the New York Giants, right?
Okay.
My career ends now. I stay there. I live there. That's my home anyway.
Okay.
And now I find a job, right?
Yeah.
There was no money. That money you made then, you wouldn't have today.
That's true.
Is that true?
Because you probably made, 6,000?
Yeah, right. That's what it was, 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what happened. Late in my career, I became the pitching coach for the Orioles. I had some success. Now I became the coach for the Orioles. Now I'm starting to make a few dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am selected as manager of Milwaukee Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
As Dalton says, "Hey, you handle pitchers so great that, you know, why can't you handle the rest of
mm-hmm.
the club?" So I was made manager. Now I start making a few bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Now my pension plan, when I became, now the
That's
pension
right.
plan is up here. In other words, if I was back in the 1940s and 50s,
when it started,
my pension plan would be nothing.
That's right.
I'll tell you, I make $75,000 a year pension.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I would have been in the big leagues and finished and went to work there,
mm-hmm.
I might be only getting $600 or $700 a month. You
That's
understand
right.
what I'm trying
That's
to
right.
say?
Mm-hmm.
So the way my career may sound, well, you won 200 and some games and
in the minor leagues,
and you never got to really a shot in the big leagues.
Yeah.
That's minor. Today, I'm retired. And I got a nice home,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have to worry about any money.
That's right.
Because my success all came later. You understand
mm-hmm.
that?
But it came later, but you also took advantage of an opportunity that maybe some other ball players would not have taken advantage. They may have given up, George.
Well,
and said, you know, hey, 18—that's a long time. Might
sure.
forget it. I'm going to
yeah.
go.
Well,
I'm going to go back to Staten Island and become sure. a pipe fitter or
well,
our bartender.
You
but
see,
you didn't do that.
No, you see what happens, Dan. When I graduated high school, I took up drafting. I went to service, and I did engineer drawing for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
I was really good in it. I was at top in the class in
mm-hmm.
that. And I was, of the graduating class, I was offered a job as apprentice draftsman.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, at that time, the World War II was on, and they dropped the age limit down to 18, which now I come into it. And the day you were 18, a month later, you went into service. Now, when I went into professional baseball, when you stay in so long, that trade of draftsman is forgotten. Because things change in 10 years, understand me? Now when you're in the game as long as, or say 10 years, now you have to stay into the game because you have no trade.
True.
Understand?
That's so you what play hungry. Me.
In other words, I got a wife now and I got kids and I got to feed them. I got to stay in this game. And that's what happened. So therefore, I stayed in it. And of course, I became minor league pitching instructor for the Orioles and the major league coach for the Orioles and manager and so on. So things worked out fairly well for me.
George, before we started this tape, you were talking about some changes in the game, and your trump card is pitching. And you've done a fantastic job of bringing together, when you were pitching coach for the Orioles, a group of, McNally, Palmer, Dotson,
Cuellar. And even Torres won 20 games.
But there were four, and I think it was in 71, that you had four pitchers win 20 games or
That's
more.
Right.
And that, I guess the only time before that was at the Cleveland Indians in 54 with Feller, an early win, and Mike Garcia.
I don't even know
if they won.
No, I don't think they did. It was way back, way back.
Well,
I think, you know, yeah.
But you were talking in reference to that of the whole nature of the game changing in terms of complete games. And I ran some stats here, but I'd like for you, if you would share some thoughts about that, because the teams you managed and coached reflected your personality about pitching. Mm-hmm. For example, in 1901, 87.3% of all games were completed by the starting pitcher. In 1988, that's 3 years ago, 14.8% were completed by the starting pitcher. It's almost complete reversal.
Right.
So would you share some thoughts about this philosophy of and what you think the impact has on, you know, the morale of the pitchers, of excellent pitchers, and what it means to managers?
Well, what's happening today, Dan, is baseball has created this problem. And to me, it's a problem.
When you say baseball has, are you talking about baseball owners or general managers or TV announcers?
I'm talking about baseball in general. No, I'm talking about your general managers, your farm directors, and so on. Years ago, when a ball player was signed, in other words, the figure speech, I was signed by the New York Giants.
Yeah.
They said, here's the baseball, and you went out and pitched. They never said you can only throw 70 pitches because you might hurt your arm or something like that. You understand? That is the worst thing that's happened today. They take these young pitchers and they say, hey, you're only allowed to throw 70 pitches. Now, here's what's happened, Dan. The kid throws 70 pitches, win, lose. He don't care that he did good throwing 70 pitches. You understand what I'm trying to say?
You almost forget about the outcome of the game.
One time, winning was the most important thing. You pitched 12 innings, you pitched 14 innings, you never thought one thing about it.
You just did it.
Two pitchers I've seen pitch a complete game against each other, 21 innings, and they never thought it was a big deal. 21 innings. Today, if a kid pitches 9 innings, it's a big deal.
But it'll be on the sports cast.
Right. What I'm driving at is the farm department or the general manager, whoever is running the baseball operation, making this thing happen because they're saying, hey, I don't only want that kid to throw 70 pitches. That's the worst thing they can do. Your arm will never get strong. They got to let the kids in the minor leagues pitch 200 and some innings a season before they come to the big leagues, instead of bringing them up there pitching 120 innings or so on. Now you ask them to do the job, they cannot do it. First of all, if you want a good pitching staff, now there's no ball club in baseball right now you can say has a great pitching staff because they won't allow it happen.
No,
and what I mean by that, you can talk about Oakland with the Catfish Hunters, the Blue Maroons, Vita Blues, Kenny Holtzman, and so on. The Orioles with Palmer, McNally, Cuellar, Dobson, or Torres. Or you can go to Cleveland Indians, you know, with the Winds and the and the Lemons and the Gosses and the Fellas and so on. Or the Mets with the Seaver, Koosman, Gentry, and so on. You won't see that. Because they won't let the guys pitch. My theory is this, and I'll swear by it. I don't care what anybody says. I'll swear by my theory. My theory is you build a pitching staff. A good example, I'll take the Mets right now as a good example.
Okay.
You got Doc Gooden, fantastic pitcher.
Yeah.
Viola, fantastic pitcher. You got Cone, which I really like Cone because I think he's a bulldog.
He's aggressive and he's hungry to win.
Right. You take these pitchers. What you do is you try to find two pitchers that can carry the load. You understand what I'm trying to say? These guys are going to be 9 innings. You want these guys to be proud of pitching 9 innings.
Mm-hmm.
You want them in your own mind to say, like Palmer, if Weaver took Palmer or McNally out with 8 1/3 or something, they were really mad because they wanted that complete game.
And now, they let you know about it.
Right. First of all, Dan, they'll keep you have a long losing streak. If you get two pitchers like that, you won't have a long losing streak.
Why?
Because these guys, you're not going to beat twice in a row.
Okay.
Understand what I mean? Now, you take a Gooden, you take a Cone, and you take a Viola. There's no way you should beat those guys twice in a row. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
If you can build these guys up to say, hey, you three guys are carrying a load.
Mm-hmm.
There's the ball. Don't look to come out. God darn it, I want a complete game out of you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to install that into them. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm trying to say? You'll never have a long losing streak. You stay on a long losing streak, you got a chance to win it.
Yeah.
But they won't allow this. The guy pitches 8 innings. He's pitching winning 6-1. They take the guy out.
Yeah.
He's winning 3-2. Now, your best pitcher in baseball. Well, what they're doing is they're putting guys in that's not as good as the guy that's out there. You understand what I'm trying to say?
But they have all the specialization in middle inning relievers.
They have the specialization. They specialize. These guys specialize. But are they better than the man they're taking out? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if I got a Jim Palmer pitching, one of the best, or Tom Seaver,
mm-hmm.
one of the best pitchers in baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the 7th inning or 8th inning. I'm in the 9th inning. Let's use the 9th inning.
Okay.
I got two men on and two outs.
And you're ahead by one run.
And I'm ahead by 1-1. Am I going to take the best man in the American League or National League out to put somebody else in to see if I can get him out? I'm not going to do that.
Well, but if you that batter came up and said, now, Palmer is... Now, he's not been too successful to get this guy.
Well, I understand what you're saying.
And you're playing the odds.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but that doesn't always pan out that way. But I want that pitcher to know that I really believe he can do it.
You trust him?
I trust him. Like when I was the pitching coach, I'll never forget this. Pat Dobson would pitch in Detroit.
Okay.
There's two men on. We're winning 2-1. And it was the 8th inning. Who's coming up with Cash, Freehand, and so on? The big boys, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out and I said to Pat, look, you got one out. Get these next two guys out and you walk up a winner. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can get them out. Do you know that? He says, yeah, I can get them out. I said, okay, let's go. In other words, when I left the mound as pitching coach, Pat Dobson says to me, yeah, I can get him out.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
Which he did. Now we're riding in the bus going to the airport. And Pat says, hey, George, suppose I told him I could, I don't know if I can get him out. What would you have done then? Well, that was not my job to
that's
take
right,
him.
That's
that was
right.
Earl Weaver.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm talking about the success of these pitchers pitching 9 innings and so on, Earl Weaver, the manager, plays a big part in that because Earl Weaver has more patience with his pitchers than any manager I've ever seen.
More patience than you?
Yeah, he has more patience. Yeah, really. And that's why these guys became great pitchers, because they knew they were going to be in, they had to do the job to do it themselves. And that's why they became great. Those guys would not be as great today if the baseball is the managers handle the guys today.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys would not have been as great today as they were then.
Well, do you think these pitchers like Dwight Gooden's and Ron Darling's,
yeah.
Frank Viola,
right.
Well, we could name a lot of others. Do they, are they saying to their managers, hey, let me stay in?
They're accepting. To my mind, the pitchers
so there's
today
kind of meekly saying,
are,
okay.
accepting, are accepting that, okay, 8 innings, I'm going to be taken out. You don't want that.
So they feel that before they walk out there on the mound and
well,
throw the first
there's
pitch.
There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. This is what I'm driving at. Now, if you say, hey, you're in there, pitch yourself out. You got yourself in a jam, pitch yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me?
Yeah.
They don't let nobody pitch out of a jam, so they don't know what they can or not. And if you do this long enough, then you can't afford. They got to start right from spring training. And another thing, the pitchers are baby so much. When I was with the Orioles, now listen to this. Jim Palmer was a sore arm pitcher when I became the pitching coach.
Sore arm?
Sore arm. Jim Palmer missed 2 years there. He was 19, had a great year with the Orioles, then he missed the time because he had a sore arm.
Mm-hmm.
Dave McNally was a sore arm pitcher, had a bad elbow. Marcelino Lopez was a bad arm pitcher, come from the California Angels.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Hall was released by the Phillies because he couldn't throw. So Hank Bauer says to me, George, I want you to set up a program for all these pitchers, which I did.
Mm-hmm. And what was this program?
Everyone, well, in other words, each day we went out, we ran.
Now, this was in 1966.
68
when you went to the World Series and won.
No, we went the next year.
'69
the Mets beat us.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said, set up a program. So anyway, we set up the program, and it did an awful lot of throwing. In other words, you jog to loosen up. Then you split the players up into two, the pitchers up to two, and they play catch for 20 minutes. Now, the reason why they're doing that, they're building up. In other words, we run to build our arms, legs up.
Mm-hmm.
You say your legs got to be strong because lifting that leg up, if your legs get tired, your control starts to vary.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
you start to get wild.
Because you pitch off your leg
right.
muscles.
So, in other words, I put in, I'm not the first one ever put this in. I learned this from Charlie Metro. When I played for Charlie Metro, I was a sore arm pitcher, and he made me throw like this, and my arm came back.
After you finish your story, I want to tell you something about the Metro boys. But
yeah.
Let's go ahead.
So anyway, I'm not trying to say I started
yeah.
it, but I put it in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Understand me?
Mm-hmm.
So they throw in 20 minutes. Now, a lot of times they play catch, they want to play 5 minutes, and that's it. I made them throw 20 minutes. No quitting. Keep soft toss.
Mm-hmm.
I'm building that arm up. Every one of these arms come back. Every one of them came back. I'll have to say this, and I'm not bragging when I say this. I was a pitching coach for the Orioles for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We had very, very few sore arms. In fact, all the sore arms come back.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Milwaukee Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
There was no sore arm pitchers. Billy Travis was a sore arm pitcher before I got there,
yeah.
and I got him back, and he won 14 games.
Mm-hmm.
Like Wally Yost, one of the chief scouts for Milwaukee, said to me about 3 months ago, he was down here. He said, George, I'll say one thing. When you manage or you coach, you never had sore arms. But I used to run them, too. I run them foul line to foul line. Now, when I took over, Hank Bauer was the key. I says to Hank, you could do me a favor. The first day, the first meeting
mm-hmm.
players, understand? I said, you could do me a favor. First of all, when you went back, Hank, the year before, you killed yourself because you went back with all these sore arm pitches. You had 23 complete games of 26. I said, if you would, in your speech, say, hey, last year, I went back with sore arm pitches, and we got killed. It's not going to happen this year. We have set up a program. Hank was really great at this. We've set up a program, and you can like it or don't like it. If you don't like it, walk off the field, put your clothes on, pack your uniform, and go on home. If you stay on the field, I assume you're going to accept this program we set up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was perfect because I needed that. I'm taking over as pitching coach from a great guy, Harry Bikin.
Harry the Cat.
Harry the Cat, and everybody loved Harry the Cat. I even told friends of mine, I said, I'm sure I can do the job. However, I don't know if I can replace Harry the Cat because he's such a nice guy. You understand what I'm trying to say? Well, winning offset that. Now, opening day, I run these guys foul line to foul line.
Every day,
and I built it from 10 up to 20. Now the season starts. Opening day, here I come in the outfield with all the balls. I says, all right, guys, let's go. So Eddie White says, what do you mean, let's go? What are you talking about, George? I says, well, here we go. Just like we did in spring training, foul line to foul line. I said, what makes you ask the question in the first place? He said, well, you know, some days, he says, I don't feel like running, so I don't run. And another day, then maybe I'll run a little bit more. I said, forget it. From now on, we're running every day. I will throw the baseballs to you, foul line to foul line. You guys only had 20-some complete games, so in my mind, that's a lack of stamina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to run foul line to foul line. Some guys will run harder than other guys. Some guys will run better. But anyway, I know you're going to get tired one way or the other. And that was it. And Earl used to say to me, hey, George, why don't you let up on those pitches? And I said, Earl, I can't do it. These guys are pitching so great. If I start letting up on them and give them time off, they're going to accept that and think they should have more. We're doing great. Just leave. He said, George, you're the pitcher. Earl was great. Earl Weaver was great. For me as a pitching coach,
so when he delegated that authority to you,
he didn't
second guess you behind your back?
No, no. The only thing I told, I reported to Earl everything. I'd say, Earl, you know, I think if we did so-and-so to so-and-so, it might help him. Earl said, if you think so, George, let's do it. You know what I mean?
Can't beat that confidence from a boss.
No, he was really great, really, really. And may I say one thing, Dan? Like I said, they only had 20-some complete games. The first year, we had 50-some complete games.
Probably hadn't been that many by one club since then.
No, and then we were 50 or 60. And the third year, there's a sports writer named Jim Elliott. Mm-hmm. Spring training says to me, George, tell me about your pitching staff. I says, Jim, we're going to have 3 20-game winners, 2 possibly win 25, and we'll have 60 complete games. And he laughed. He said, you kidding me? I said, no, I'm not kidding.
This was 1971.
No. This was 1970.
Okay.
1970. He says, you kidding me? I said, no, I'm not kidding you. And he said, can I print it? I said, you can print it because I got this much faith in these guys. Mm-hmm. Then we had 3 20-game winners, 2 won 24. Now, I said possibly 25, and 60 complete games right on the nose. So now the next year.
Did Elliott come back at the end of the season and talk with you about that?
1971, he comes to me and he says to me, George, how about this year? I said, Jim, you're not going to believe this. We're going to have 4 20-game winners and we'll have 70 complete games. And he started laughing. He said, you can't be serious. I said, I'm serious. Why would I want to make a statement and make myself look bad? Mm-hmm. This ball club is this good and these guys are this good that we can do this. The season ended. We have 4 20-game winners and 71 complete games. Now we're in Cleveland. So Jim Elliott's talking to me and Dave McNally's standing there and he says to me, where'd you go wrong? So, so I said, what do you mean where'd I go wrong? He says, you said you have 4 20-game winners, which you did, but you said you have 70 complete games, you have 71. And Dave McNally says, George wasn't wrong. Weaver fouled up. Davey Leonard, who was our long relief man that only pitched maybe 35, 40 innings a year, Earl started him and he pitched a complete game. And Dave McNally says he never should have pitched a complete game. But that's,
on that score, as a manager and as a pitching coach, you've been in both. Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic, the prophecy, but let alone the fact that I don't remember when it happened before 1971,
right.
But whenever it happened, it was a long drought.
It's way back, I think, in the 20s or something like that.
How as a manager or even as a pitching coach, you got to use these guys often. Now, you got somebody out there in the bullpen. How do you keep their morale up if they're just sitting on the out there in the bullpen all the time and they think they'll never get in?
All right. I kept a book. First of all, I kept a book. After the game, Palmer 9 innings, right? Mm-hmm. Leonard threw 10 minutes in the bullpen, so and so. I never let the pitchers rest around over one day in the bullpen. In other words, even though they did not get a call to go in the game, I called down, say, 7th inning or so, get Watt up or get Rickett up and so on. I want them to throw at least 10 minutes, save enough in case I need them later on. You understand what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. But if not, at least they got their work in. And I tell the pitchers.
Were they satisfied with that?
Because I tell them in spring training, especially young kids coming up, I said, let me tell you something right
now.
Yeah,
they want to be in the game. They don't want to be in the bullpen.
They want to be in the game. Well, certainly they want to be in the game. But they realized, they were smart enough to realize, these guys are going out there and we're winning 2-1, 1-0, 3-2. Of course, our ERA that one year was 2.68, I think, for the whole pitching staff, which is fantastic. Well, if you're sitting in the bullpen and you see a guy like Palmer McNally pitching such great ball or Quay or whoever it may be, you got to say, well, the man, if he puts him in, he's got to be stupid. If they have any common sense, if they've seen a man pitch that great and shows no signs of getting tired, no signs of wildness, and just wiping them out, They're going to say, man, that man is stupid. They put me in a ball game. We all know they all want to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
They all know. We all know that. But why? That's why we won the pennants, because these guys went out and pitched the games, and we won by winning 100 games or 105 games or something like that, mm-hmm. because these guys went out and done it. And they were smart enough to know these guys were great. And the same thing, we got these star young guys that we know, Rochester, we know we had this fantastic talent in the Baltimore organization. These guys come up, and the first thing I say, let me tell you something right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest about it. You are not going to be a starting pitcher on this ball club, because these guys won 20 games last year, and you're not going to beat them out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
But however, work down that bullpen, concentrate. When every time you get up and throw, concentrate. And when we get in the game, do the very best you can. And so on. But that's the way it is. These guys, we went with four starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today you tell a guy to pitch with four starting pitchers, they might say, they might call the union on you. Understand mm-hmm. what I'm
yeah,
trying to say?
Yeah.
In my own heart, I know if the pitchers would pitch every fourth day, they'd be better pitchers. Because what you do is you pitch, you have a day off, I worked them on the sidelines for 20 minutes on the next day,
mm-hmm.
day off, and pitched again. Your arm, in other words, you kept you sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You may not throw the extra miles per hour, but your control and your sharpness was so much greater.
Consistency.
Yeah, and they got used to that. And when we have rained out and the guy got an extra day's rest, they would squawk. They bitch and moan about
yeah.
it because, geez, I got too much rest.
Yeah.
You understand me?
I feel sluggish.
Yeah, yeah. And even something else, Dan. If today was tomorrow was a day off,
mm-hmm.
and it was Palmer's day to work out on the sideline,
mm-hmm.
he had to report to the ballpark and work out and do his throwing.
Couldn't stay in the hotel.
In other words, say we're home
mm-hmm.
in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Day off. Geez, what I'm going to do? Got friends. You know, you don't get
yeah.
that many days.
Yeah.
He had to come his day to throw on the sidelines. He had
to dress up and get out there on that field.
I knew every time a guy threw, and that starting pitcher worked on the side, never threw without me standing there.
What were you looking for?
I wasn't really looking for anything. I just want him to throw strikes. My theory in pitching is this. You pitch consistently on the outer half of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the ball in the big part of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, you come in. Now, I want to explain this because I listen to this on TV all the time. They say, you got to pitch in. Understand what I'm trying
yeah.
to say?
Mm-hmm. Pitching on the wrist.
Right. You got to pitch in. Okay. Now, every ball, now think of this. Every ball, or most every ball, or 9 out of 10 or 19 out of 20, you see a guy hit a home run, the ball is right on the inner half of the plate at the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? It don't. Now, the same guy, Ray announcer, that says you got to pitch in to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
If they would explain, say, yes, you throw five pitches out here, you maybe throw one or two in here.
Little chin.
If they explain it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they sound like you got to keep throwing in.
Mm-hmm.
The same radio announcers, a guy will throw a ball low and away, strike three and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
The same radio announcers say there's no way in heck you can hit that ball. Well, if there's no way in heck you can hit the ball out there, why not throw the baseball out there?
Mm-hmm.
When my pitchers warmed up when I was a coach for Orioles or even Milwaukee Brewers mm-hmm. or so on, when they got their arm loose, the catcher set low and away, and they practiced that one spot. Now, number one,
so when you said the catcher there...
low and away, perfect strike, low and away. Now, what...
Then you sit there and watch them.
Yeah. Now, what the theory that was... Now I got them concentrating a little bit. You understand
mm-hmm.
what I mean? They're not just throwing the baseball. They're throwing something within their mind. And the most important thing probably is they're going to come up with an excellent delivery. In other words, to throw a baseball low and away, you must stay close. You must get your head going forward so you can reach out to get the ball there.
Mm-hmm.
If you open up too quick, the ball could be high inside.
So a late release point.
That's right. You got the... same release, but you end up with a perfect delivery. And that was the whole theory about that. And my pitchers, once their arms were loose, and I sit there, I say to the catcher, okay, low and away.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was a left-hand pitcher, be
yeah,
inside
yeah,
to a
yeah.
right-hander. Okay, now, for the next 15 minutes, they threw to that one spot. I don't care if it was slider, curveball, what it may be, they threw to that one slide. They got themselves into that groove.
So they really kind of created a mental image in their mind.
There's no doubt about it. No, and I talked to Billy Connors and I talked to Greg Pavlik, who's a book, and they agree 100%. I said, if you want to make yourself a good pitcher, you got to get him, because what he practices on the sideline is what he's going to bring into the game. That's exactly what he's going to bring into the game.
Okay, so he's warming up before the game, pre-game warm-up, and he's doing this.
Yeah.
Now, if I were on the opposing team, I'd have somebody over there looking and saying, where's he pitching
that? That's good. That's good. He's pitching away.
He's pitching away.
Right
well,
now.
I tell you what, I'd sure be telling
batters,
I said, hey, this guy, this is where he's going to do.
That's right.
Wait for that pitch.
That's right. Now, you can tell George Bell and all those guys that the ball's going to be low and away, they still can't hit it.
Why?
Because the guys only can hit the balls right in here, and they keep throwing them in here all day. You watch George Bell, you start a slider on the outer half the plate, he'll go after it.
Mm-hmm. Fall over himself.
Sure. But now, you brought up the perfect thing when you say pitch inside. I am a pitcher, right?
Yep.
Okay, here's the first pitch. Bam. Mm-hmm. On the outer. First of all, the first pitch, you want to get ahead of the hitter.
You bet.
If it's a fastball, it's going to be your best. If it's a curveball, you would just want to throw it in the strike zone. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking you're ahead of the hitter.
Mm-hmm.
So here you go ahead of him. All right. Now you throw a ball, it's a little bit outside, and you see the hitter kind of leaning in.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
You see this, the catch. Now the next one, you run in here.
Okay.
Now you come right back on the outer half of the plate again. That's what you can do, is run one in here. Now you straighten him up a little bit. Now he's not diving out there. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Davey Johnson was an excellent ball player for the Baltimore Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
Davey Johnson was a good hitter, but Davey Johnson was like a 10 home run hitter a year.
Mm-hmm.
They used to pitch Davey Johnson away, and Davey would get a lot of base hits, swinging one-handed, and hit the ball to right field.
Mm-hmm.
Davey Johnson's traded to Atlanta. If you recall this, Davey hits 42 or 44 home runs.
Yeah, I do remember. Mm-hmm.
You understand? You remember that?
Yep.
Our ball players would talk back when Andy Etcheverry maybe talking to Davey. They called back. Well, they were all very good friends.
Yeah,
they played
sure.
together many years. And they said, what are you doing? Davey said, they keep throwing me the ball inside, and I keep hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But you watch on TV or in the ball games, those pitchers inside are the ones that go out of the ballpark. Now, if a guy has the ball's away, hits one in the right field, give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves it.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, if you can establish that, you're going to be a winning pitcher. Throw the ball over home plate as much as you can, with idea when you're ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Not when you're ahead. When you're ahead, you can't pitch behind. The first pitch, if you're throwing a fastball, is my best against the hitter. Let's see what happens.
Yep.
You throw a curveball, you try to throw it over the plate, because if he's a good fastball hitter, you say, well, I'll throw him a curveball on the first pitch, if he's sitting on a fastball. Understand me?
Yeah.
I watch games, Dan. It's Raybeck. Excellent pitcher.
Who?
Trebek with the Pirates. Excellent pitcher. I'm watching him.
Mm-hmm.
I go nuts worse sitting here watching games than when I was managing. Now, Trebek is pitching. And here comes the pitcher up. There's two men on. Early in the year. Throws him fastball. And I said, well, how can you throw this guy a fastball? One pitcher, has a chance to hit his fastball.
Yeah.
Next pitcher, fastball, base hit. Two runs scored. He ended up losing the game. I said, geez, how can you do this? Spin the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Slider. In other words, I used to take my pitches. I thought my pitchers should be able to throw a slider over home plate as well as a fastball.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind.
Never heard of that.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. You're on. If you can't do it, work on it. I want you to. The slider is nothing but a fastball that breaks a little bit. You understand me?
Uh-huh.
There's no reason you can't throw that for a strike as well as the fastball. And some guys will throw that better for a strike than the fastball, maybe because they concentrate. And aim it right for the middle of the plate. Now, if you aim it for the middle of the plate and it breaks that much, it's going to be out of half. Aim it right for the middle.
Of course, that 6 inches is the difference between a strikeout and a home run.
Sure. Now, when you're behind the count, 2-0, guy good fastball, you throw a slider. 3-1, 3-2, 3-2. I love my pitchers to throw a slider, 3-2. I never like my pitchers to give in to a hitter. But you can't make somebody do something they can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a pitcher out there that he just can't do it, I can't make him do it. So I wouldn't even try to make him do it.
So you changed your...
In other words, but the average pitcher I had, I could say you can throw a slider any time you want.
So did you call the catcher... when you were either with the Brewers or the Orioles, did you give the catcher the sign as
once
to what
to
throw?
Once in a while you go like that. Once in a while, but they knew my thinking.
So they didn't have to look over the dugout all the time.
Earl a lot of times would go, Earl liked that slider too, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But what you try to do is you try to explain to these guys this is the way to go about it.
So they think
when
about
you
that
get behind, when you get behind, what is the hitter looking for? You're looking for a fastball. Yeah. You throw a changeup, and the hitter swings and misses it. Mm-hmm. Now I say this to the pitcher. Now where are you going to throw the next pitch? He said, I'm going to throw him a fastball. Mm-hmm. I said to the hitter, come here. If a guy throws you a changeup, where are you looking for the next pitch? He says a fastball. I said, why would you want to throw a guy a fastball? Throw him a slider to make the ball do something different. You understand?
That's right.
Make the ball do
keep
something different. Right. Yeah. And my theory of pitching is not so much spots. My theory of pitching is this. Change in speed. You can throw the ball right in the middle of the plate because all hitting is timing. You understand
mm-hmm.
that? Yeah. So you change speeds. You throw a fastball with the seams, throw the next one across the seams, or vice versa. You throw a good curveball, you throw your regular curveball, and the guy swings and misses that. If you come back with another curve, shorten it up about 2 feet just to get that timing. You understand
mm-hmm.
me?
Mm-hmm.
You throw a changeup to a hitter, and he really looks pathetic. Now, the first thing a hitter is going to say to him himself, I got to fight that off. He throws me another one, I got to fight it off until I get something I can hit.